Okay, welcome back to Shmuel Beis. So we are learning Perek Chaf Gimel, the second to last Perek of Shmuel Beis. Next Perek, Perek Chaf Dal, is the last Perek. We'll see how much we cover tonight. The end of the Perek is actually kind of light, just a whole bunch of names at the end of the Perek, different soldiers of David and warriors of David. So we'll see. I don't know if we can do the whole thing tonight. We'll see. The beginning is more or less a Shira, as we'll see in a moment. Okay, so we ended actually last Perek Chaf Beis was really a Shira, right? We saw it even had the structure. And if you look inside the inside of a Navi, it actually has the structure of a Shira. It looks almost like Az Yashir, you know, like it looks in the Torah. So that was the Shira that we had in Perek Chaf Beis. Perek Chaf Gimel talks a lot about David's. It's almost like a history, like a repeat of the history of David's, you know, David's life and different battles and different warriors that fought with him. Very interesting. So let's take a look. Pasuk Aleph. Ve'ela divrei David ha'achronim. These are the final words of David, the last words of David. David ben Yishai. Une'um ha'gever hukam al Mashiach Elokei Yaakov. And because it's a little poetic, I'll read for you the translation of Artsville here, and then we'll explain what some of the Mefarshim say. That this was the speech of David, the son of Yishai, obviously, and the speech of the man who was established on high, Mashiach, Hukam al Mashiach Elokei Yaakov, the anointed one of the God of Yaakov, Une'im Zemiros Yisrael. And this is a famous expression. A famous description of David HaMelech as the Ne'im Zemiros Yisrael, literally the pleasing composer of the songs of Yisrael. What is this referring to? Obviously referring to Tehillim, right? That he's referred to as the Ne'im Zemiros Yisrael based on his compositions in Tehillim. Now, one thing that's very interesting, you know, Divrei David HaAchronim, these are the last words. What were the first words? Right, if these were the last words, so what were the first words? So Rashi says the first words were the Shira. That was the Shira that we read in the last parak, parakal days. Those were the first words. And these were the last words. This is essentially his final piece here. It's interesting that if you look at Rashi, if you have Rashi there with you, Rashi says, Nevuas David Achronim. This was the last Nevuah of David. Now it's interesting because normally, if I were to ask you, is David a Navi? You would probably tell me, he's not a Navi. He's a king. Shmuel was the Navi. Nathan was the Navi. God, right? Other Naviim. But, you know, David, he wasn't a Navi. But here, Rashi says, Nevuas David Achronim. It sounds like, according to Rashi, that he had a certain level of Nevuah. Other Mefarshim say, wasn't quite Nevuah. If you look in the Radak, he says it was like a Ruach HaKodesh. That he had a Ruach HaKodesh, and as many of the Mefarshim say, Ruach HaKodesh is a step below Nevuah. Nevuah is a clear vision from Hashem. Ruach HaKodesh is one step below Nevuah. Well, I like to call it divine inspiration. You know, so you're inspired by the Ribbono Shel Olam, not quite a clear Nevuah, like a clear vision, like a Navi gets. That's how the Radak understands it, was that this was Ruach HaKodesh, not really a Nevuah. Maybe, but again, it's not a clear Nevuah. You know, a clear Nevuah is a Navi who gets a vision and has to interpret that vision and pass that on to Bnei Yisrael. That's not what David was doing. And even in Tehillim, even if there maybe are some references to future events in Tehillim, it's not the same way. If anything, it's an allusion. You know, that David was alluding to something, and maybe again, you know, if something was written by Ruach HaKodesh, it could be that he was alluding to something, and that was part of the divine inspiration when he wrote Tehillim, that he was alluding to some future event, but it's not Nevuah in the classic sense. Again, here Rashi says Nevuah, but it's not, you know, Tehillim is not known as Nevuah in the classic sense. Who's right now?
Yeah.
So he's talking to Bnei Yisrael, and we'll see. He's, you know, this is his, and to us, right? So, yeah, I mean, this is included in the book of Navi. He's talking to all of us, but certainly talking to Bnei Yisrael. Now, it's interesting. He starts out, Ne'um David ben Ishai. Right? These are the words of David ben Ishai. And Ne'um HaGever, Hukam HaMashiach HaLokei Yaakov. Right? The words of the man who was established on high. He starts out as the Mitzudas David says, that he's talking about himself like a Pashta person. David ben Ishai. You know, he's not King David. He's not David HaMelech. David ben Ishai. You know, that's why I'm Shalom Aleichem, David ben Ishai. You know, a simple person, a humble person. And he was saying that, you know, that all of this began when he was on a very low level. He was just a shepherd of his father's sheep. He wasn't anything special. He wasn't a king yet. He wasn't anything. This is when everything started. And then the Mefarshim point out that the Ne'im Zemiros Yisrael at the end, why is he called the Ne'im Zemiros Yisrael? So, of course, Tehillim. But also the Mefarshim say that his Tehillim were used in the Beis HaMikdash. All the Shirim that they sung in the Beis HaMikdash were exclusively Tehillim. Right? So Tehillim is like, these are the songs of the Jewish people. He was the composer. He was the Jewish composer of all the great songs. Okay. Pasuk Beis. Ruach Hashem diber bi umilaso alushoni. Very important pasuk. The Spirit of Hashem spoke through me. His word is upon my tongue. Okay, and Rashi and the Mitzvah, some of all the Mefarshim here say that this is the Ruach HaKodesh. And the way that Ruach HaKodesh works is that it's almost like I'm not talking. Not me, but it's David. It's almost like David's not talking. The Ruach HaKodesh enters me, and whatever comes out, that's the Ruach HaKodesh. It's, again, divinely inspired. Nevuah is certainly like that. Whatever I'm saying, whatever the Navi is saying, is not his own words. As the Mitzvah Sava said, it's not words spoken with wisdom. This is Ruach HaKodesh. It comes directly from Hashem, either divinely inspired, if it's Nevuah, it's a higher level, but it's directly from Hashem, but Ruach Hashem diberbi. I saw something fascinating on the bottom of the art scroll here. He quotes, on this pasuk, he quotes the Drashos Haran. I have to look at it inside. It's very interesting. Drashos Haran coming up in the Parsha. So we know that Yitzchak was intending to give the bracha to Yaakov. I'm sorry, to Esav. And what happened? Yaakov stole the bracha, right? So the question you can ask is that, well, so why did the bracha work? If it was a mistaken bracha, that wasn't what Yitzchak was intending. Yitzchak was intending to give it to Esav. So you can make the argument that maybe the bracha shouldn't work. You know, you make a ha'etz on a piece of meat. It doesn't work. The bracha doesn't work. So here, obviously, it's not the same type of bracha. It's not a bracha sanenim. But here, too, if his bracha was intended for Esav, and that's who we thought he was giving a bracha to, you could make the argument that the bracha would not work. It wouldn't be effective if it was given to Yaakov. Okay. You know, Hashem wanted it to work, but Hashem could do it in other ways. But you have a mistaken bracha. I understand. But I understand that. That's why he didn't notice it. But the point is that maybe the whole thing shouldn't be effective. Right? What he said shouldn't be effective. He's giving it to the wrong person. So he quotes the Joshua Saran, who says, based on this pasuk, Ruach Hashem diber bi. And it wasn't Yitzchak even talking. Like Aaron is saying, more than Hashem just wanted it. This was like Hashem giving the bracha. So it wasn't Yitzchak giving. It was just from Yitzchak giving the bracha. Okay, you could say he was a mistaken bracha. He was meant to give it to Esau. He gave it to Yaakov by accident. You know, it doesn't work. It's not effective. But here, it wasn't from Yitzchak. It was from Hashem. Yitzchak was just a mouthpiece. He was just a conduit. He was the medium through which this bracha was coming.
It seems like Rashi, though, seems to equate Nevuah.
You're saying because in Pasuk Aleph he says Nevuah?
No.
So Rashi says here, Diberbi, Ishrabi Ruach Kotshav and Idbarbi. Cholosh and Nevuah, Nofel Alosh and Dibor. Daber. Yeah. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Are you saying that someone needs to have Nevuah in order to have...
He's saying from Rashi, it sounds like Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh are the same. I don't know. You have to look more at Rashi and see what he holds. Generally, we assume that Ruach HaKodesh is a step below Nevuah. Now, Rashi could be understanding that maybe it's like a whole framework. You know, within Nevuah, Ruach HaKodesh is like a low-level Nevuah, something like that. Otherwise, why do you need Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah? Sounds like it's two separate things. Yeah, I hear you. You have to do more of a survey of Rashi and see, you know, what he says elsewhere. I don't know. Okay.
Robert, I was just reading that at least 10 people wrote to Hillel.
But yeah.
You only hear about David.
Yeah.
David, that's, I never heard that.
Because David HaMelech was the main composer. You have others that were written by other people. You have like Mizmor LaAsaf. You know, Asaf wrote, and you have Tefila LaMoshe. Moshe wrote Bnei Korach, right? So you have a couple, you know, a few others, a small group of people that wrote other ones, and they were included also. But the bulk of it was David HaMelech. Mm-hmm. The bulk of it was David HaMelech. Okay, Pasuk Gimel. Amar Elokei Yisrael Li Diber. So he said, David said that the God of Israel has said, Tzur Yisrael, Li Diber Tzur Yisrael. And the rock of Israel has spoken to me. And again, referring to Hashem as the rock, like we saw in the previous parak several times. Moshe ba'adam tzadik, Moshe yiras Elokim. Become a ruler over men, a righteous one, who rules through the fear of God. And this is now essentially David describing Hashem appointing him as the melech. Hashem appointing him as the king. He started off as a lowly shepherd, and now Hashem is appointing him as the king, right? And says Rashi, that means that I have to now rule with tzidkus. I have to rule with righteousness. When a tzaddik, in the Mitzvah HaTzavet said, when a tzaddik is the ruler, then really Yiras Shamayim is the ruler. Because that's what the tzaddik embodies. The tzaddik embodies Yiras Shamayim. So if you have a king who's a tzaddik, then really the Yiras Shamayim is ruling the kingdom and not anything else. The Radak here quotes the Targum Yonasan, who says this is also a reference to the Melech HaMashiach. That David was saying that Mashiach is going to descend from me. Mashiach ben David is going to descend from me. And that Mashiach will rule with Yira, will rule with awe. That's the Yiras Elokim at the end. There is a reference to Mashiach. So that's also a remez, the Targum Yonasan says it exists in this Pasuk. Pasuk Dalet. Uche'or boker yizrach shamesh, and like the light of the morning, the sun will rise. Okay, again, a reference to David and his kingdom, you know, rising like the sun and illuminating everything around. Boker lo avos, an unclouded morning. Avos like cloud. Av ha'anan, right? So it's not. It's an unclouded morning. It's a bright, clear day. Minoga mimatar deshe me'aretz, that brighter than the glistening rain upon the herbage of the earth. Imagine like the rain falls on the grass, and then and then all of a sudden the sky clears and the sun shines down. So that glistening, like you see in the grass, the glistening of the grass. So that's like that's how radiant David HaMelech's kingdom and David HaMelech's kingship was over cloud Israel. Radak says here also there's a reference that my kingdom should have been clear, like a clear day, like, you know, without any question. Now, again, we know that's not the case. David HaMelech, even when he started, Shaul was still in power. And then you had Ishbosheth and you had Avshalom. That challenges his power. We did learn at the end that things calmed down and he was able to reign in peace. But at the same time, that's really what it is. And the Tzudas David here says also that this reference to sunlight and the rain, so obviously things that grow from the ground need sunlight, need both sunlight as well as rain, as well as water in order to grow. So he's saying that so too, the tzaddik who rules has an agenda. He has a righteous agenda. He wants people to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He can only do that if he has the rulership, if he's the king. If you have the tzaddik, but he doesn't have control, he can't accomplish. So you have to have the tzidkus, you have to have the righteousness, and the righteous one has to be in power so that he can move forward his agenda. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. Just like you need the sunlight and you need the rain, so too you need the righteousness and you need the power to be able to push that holy agenda. Pasuk Hey, ki lo chein beisi. So literally, for my house was not thus with God, im el, ki lo chen beisi im kel, kiveris olam sam li, that Hashem made an everlasting covenant with me, Arucha v'achol, it's clear. Let's see the words here. Firmly established. It's firmly established. Ushmura ki chol yishi v'chol chefetz ki lo yatzmiach. And secure in all my house, for my salvation and desire have been fulfilled, for he will not allow other kingdoms to sprout. So here also, this bris, the bris olam that we're referring to, this everlasting covenant, so Rashi says one of two pshatim, either the everlasting covenant is that the kingdom is only David's and only his family and no one else, and that's at the end, you know, this he will not allow other kingdoms to sprout, or the covenant is also could also refer to the Torah. That the Torah is the everlasting covenant. That's why the article translate that also in brackets, i.e. the Torah, the everlasting covenant, the Torah, that can also be part of this bris olam. Pasuk vav, uvliyal ki kots munad, kulaham ki lo v'yad yikachu. That godless men, bliyal, referring to godless men, are all like a wind-blown thistle. So the Mefarshim explain, it's like thorns. You know, it's like thorns. And in the beginning, Rashi says they're soft. In the beginning, when the thorns start growing, they're soft, but then they harden. And they harden to the point where you can't touch them. You can't touch them with your hands. You can't touch them with your hands. So too these Rishayim. You know, they start off mild, and then they harden, and they get very difficult, and you can't handle them. And says the Radak, you have to kick them around. How do you get rid of thorns? How do you get rid of, barbed wire, you know, or thorns, but you got to kick it with your feet, with your shoes on. Can't handle it with your hands. And says the Mitzudah Sava that just like these thorns don't stay in one place, people kick them around, so too with the wicked. Right now they might be in a place, but they're not going to last long. They'll be moved around, they'll be kicked around. The wicked will not last long. Pasuk Zayin, v'ishi gabohem imole varzel, and a person who touches them has to be full of iron. And by the shaft of the spear, they must be thoroughly burnt where they are. Meaning, again, this is the mashal that in order to handle them, you have to wear protection. You have to be protected. And the only thing to do with them is to burn them. And so at the end, it refers to burning them, and you benefit from the warmth. So the nimshal. Says Rashi is that so too the Rishayim. There's nothing to do with them. You just got to burn them. I mean, how do you burn them? They burn in Gehenna. They'll burn in Gehenna. And then, you know, just like you benefit from the warmth of the burning thorns, so too when the Rishayim are punished, we all benefit. When the Rishayim are finally punished in Gehenna, we all benefit. And then the end, that word over there at the end, Bashoves, is that like Sheves, like Hashem sits on the throne of judgment. Okay, now we're moving to that's kind of the end of the introductory part of this Shira. And now he moves to discuss some of the warriors, some of the mighty warriors that have fought with him throughout the years. Pasuk Ches. Some of these we've heard about and some of these we have not. Elish Shmos HaGiborim Asher LeDavid. So these are the names of David's warriors. Yoshev Basheves Tachemoni Rosh HaShalishi. So literally, one who sat in the assembly, a sagacious man, Tachemoni, like Chacham, like a smart, sagacious man. Rosh HaShalishi, the head of the captains, who Adino Haetzni. That was the fellow's name, Adino Haetzni. Al Shimona Meos Chalo Befam Echos. And he stood over 800 corpses at one time. Okay, now this person was Pashtuf Shad here, is that we're talking about a soldier of his that was very powerful, that was very mighty. And this fellow, Adino, was a strong soldier. Rashi says that the Rosh HaShalishi means that he was great in three ways. He was good looking, he was handsome, he had tremendous wisdom, and that's why I refer to him as Tachemoni, and also he was very strong. He was a very strong warrior. Now, interesting, the Medrash says, quoted by Rashi, quoted by some of the other Mefarshim here, is that some said that this is referring actually to David, that this is not really a description of David's warriors, but it's actually referring to David and talking about some of his qualities, that he was great in Torah and in other things. It says that, that when he would study Torah, he would be like a humble, like a worm, like a little worm. And then when he went out to battle, he was strong like wood. You know, based on this pasuk, that's Adino Ha'etzni. Adino is a reference to like a fine little worm, and then Ha'etzni is like eights. That's strong. He would be strong when he would go out to battle. So again, simple understanding of the pasuk is that it's referring to someone's name. It's referring to a real soldier, one of his warriors. This is the drash, this is the medrash that Chazal say that it's a hint also to David and some of his qualities as the king. Some say it's actually referring to Yoav also. There are those that say Yoav. There are those that say that it's referring to Yoav. And the Mesudah Sabbath points out here that these three people, we're going to learn about three people here. Adino is the first one. Again, if you work with the Pashup shot, that these are referring to his warriors. So the Mesudah Sabbath said here, you know, why are we talking about his warriors all of a sudden? You know, we didn't talk about all these, you know, the whole time, the whole Sefer Shmuel Beis was all about David. We didn't even hear about, okay, maybe his generals here and there, Yoav and Abishai. We heard about some of the generals. We didn't hear about all these warriors. So here, the Mitzvah Sovet said that David is aging. And as he's getting older, he can't do everything himself. He can't fight himself anymore. So he needed bodyguards. These three men that we're going to discuss are his three bodyguards that were with him. And that were taking care of him as he got older. He was an older man. Now he couldn't defend himself the way that he once could. And he needed people to protect him. So these were his bodyguards. That's how the Mitzvah Sovet understands.
Can we discuss
this? Yes. He went out to battle. We learned there that he went out to battle. That was like his last battle. And he was weak. But he was weak in battle. He was tired. And Baruch Hashem, his men helped him. But they realized that, okay, it's time to hang up the cleats. Not exactly. Time to hang up the sword.
Remember, you need three people. If one guy can handle 800 men, if that's
success. I hear you. I don't know. He was the king. You know, you gotta be careful with the king. Okay, Pasuk Tes. The Acharav. And the second greatest soldier. Again, Pasuk Shad is that we're talking about three great soldiers here. The second greatest soldier, Elazar ben Dodo ben Achochi. His name was Elazar ben Dodo. That was his name. Ben Achochi, he was Achochite. Bishlosha Giborim im David. These were the three of David's greatest soldiers with David. Becharfam Aplishtim. And they defied they fought against like a Cheref. They would almost like brazen. It would be brazen in front of the Plishtim. Nes husham la milchama vayalu ish Yisrael, and they gathered there all the Jews to fight against the Plishtim. And Rashi says here also that these three great soldiers made a pact. They made a deal with each other that they're going to fight against the Plishtim and they're going to win. They're going to take care of them. Okay. It wasn't just the three of them, but these were the tops. These were the commandos, right? So you had this for the first fellow, Adino Ha'ezri. He was Ha'etzni, I'm sorry. Adino Ha'etzni, he was number one. And then number two was Elazar ben Dodo ben Achochi. And number three, we're going to see in Pasuk Yud Aleph, is a fellow by the name of Shama ben Agay. Okay, Pasuk Yud. But still talking about Elazar ben Dodo here. Who come vayach ba plishtim? So he got up and he defeated the plishtim. Ad ki yoga yada, to the point, you know, he was killing so many plishtim that his hand got tired. You know, like the kids always clutch in school when they're writing too many, sentences, their hands is tired from all the writing. It's computer all day, your hands are tired. So he was killing so many plishtim, his hands got tired. And he was holding the sword for so long, his hands got tired. Yeah, okay. And his hand stuck to the sword. And Hashem made an incredible salvation on that day. So it's very interesting. Rashi said that the people came back, meaning originally everybody had fled. They ran away from the Plishtim. And some of these commandos, some of these, you know, the real strong warriors stayed behind to fight. They didn't leave. You know, all the other infantrymen, they all ran away. And these courageous soldiers stayed to fight. And now, you know, all the soldiers look back and they see that these guys are winning. They're killing all these Plishtim. So they ran back.
War this was? Was this the last war, or we don't know which
one? I don't know. I don't know exactly which one this was, because we know there were several times throughout the history. So I don't know exactly.
The later ones, when David was getting tired, that he needed to.
Could be. It could be. Could be. So it's interesting. It says that the Ha'am Yashuvu Acharav, the people ran back after they saw that this you know, especially this fellow, Elazar ben Dodo, was being so successful, was killing all these people. So they ran back, but it says they didn't run back to help him. He didn't need any help. They ran back achlefashet. So some say that means they ran back to deal with all the bodies. You know, this guy was killing all the Plishtim. There were all these dead bodies hanging around. So the Jewish soldiers had to come back to help move the bodies. That's what some say. Others say that the lefashet means to remove their uniforms. They took their uniforms once they were dead. They took their uniforms, they took their armor maybe, you know, helmets or whatever else they took from the Plishti soldiers, but they came back to take these things. Okay, and now number three, Pasuk Yud Aleph, the Achar of Shama ven Agei Harari. So the third warrior was a fellow by the name of Shama ven Agei Harari, which means he was from the mountains, he was from the mountain. Vayeosu Plishtim Lachaya, and all the Plishtim gathered together. Interesting term, lachaya. We find it again a little in a few psukim a little bit later. Lachaya means that they came together like a pack of animals. Lachaya, like an animal. But they came together like a pack. They gathered together just like animals. You know, they travel in packs. They fight in packs. So here too, they came together in a pack. Vatihishom chelkas hasode, and they were there by the field. Meleya adoshim, and the field was full of lentils. This was a field that was full of lentils, you know, lentil plants. The ha'am nas mipnei plishtim, and here the people ran. The Jewish army ran from the plishtim. All the mafarshim here discuss the fact that if you look in Divrei Hayomim, it seems to say that this battle was that there was barley in the field and not lentils in the field. Whole question of what it was. Some say that we were talking about two different battles here. And the one field was lentils. Well, you know, one time there were lentils, and another time there was barley. Some say it's two different things. Okay, but a whole discussion among the mafarshim what exactly was here. And then pasuk Yud Beis, Vayisyatzev b'socha chelka. So he stood. This again is Shama ben Agei. Shama ben Agei. He stood in the field, in the middle, in the open portion of the field. Vayatzi leha, and he saved it. This was a whole field full of crops, and the Plishtim could have destroyed it, but he was the one who saved the crops. By Yaches Plishtim, and he defeated the Plishtim. By Yas Hashem Teshua Gidola, and Hashem made an incredible miracle. And here also it says that he saved it from being burnt, and that's why it says Vayisyat save in the singular. He was the one who was most responsible for saving it. Even though there were other warriors, but he was the one who was most responsible for saving it. Now we'll see in a couple of psukim the medrash, very interesting medrash as to what exactly was going on here. We'll see in a moment. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayerdu Shlosha Mehashloshim Rosh. So the three men, there were three men who were officers over the 30 men. Right, Mehashloshim Rosh. They were the officers of the 30 men. They came down. Vayavo El Katsir El David, and they came Al Katsir. The Mefarshim say, or El Katsir. I'm sorry. The Mefarshim say is referring to at the time of the harvest. They came at the time of the harvest down to David. El Ma'aras Adulam. David was in this place called the cave of Adulam. That's where David was located. Mechayas Plishtim Chona Be'emek Rifayim, and this group of Plishtim, the band of Plishtim, was camping in Emek Rifayim.
Did we learn about
yes. Yes. Very good. Very good. So that's what the Radak says here. That back when David was hiding from Shaul, also we learned that he was hiding in Ma'aras Adulam. This was the place that he was hiding. And this was like a fortress. It was a cave, but it was like a fortress. It was a stronghold of David, and this is where he was. Apparently, there was a big rock there that was protective, that that David hid behind this this area. This is where he was, and they came to him there. The David Ozba Metzuda, and David at that time was in this fortress. And again, the Mefarshim said this is a reference to this Me'aras Adulam, this cave of Adulam, which was like a fortress because it was surrounded by this very big rock formation. Umatzav Plishtim Oz Beis Lachem. And there was a troop of Plishtim at that time in Beis Lachem. So the main Plishtim were in Emek Rephaim, which we just learned about. These are obviously Emek Rephaim, right? You have in the Yerushalayim now the Emek Rephaim street, Rechov Emek Rephaim. So this is the actual place, Emek Rephaim, where the Plishtim were located. And now the Plishtim had a troop that was in Beis Lechem also. Now this is very, very interesting. Pasuk says, the Vayis'aved David, David had a desire, Vayomar, and he said, Mi Ashkeni Mayim Mi Bor Beis Lechem. Oh, who would give me a drink from the water of the wells of Beis Lechem? Asher Bashar, which is at the gate. So again, Pashup Shat, there was a well in Beit Lechem, at the gate of Beit Lechem, which had apparently very good water, and David wanted this water. Some of the Mefarshim say that the time of the harvest, you know, this was time of the harvest. Time of the harvest is like the summertime in Israel. So it was very hot. So David was very hot, and they had nice cold water there in the well in Beit Lechem, where he was staying in Me'aras Adulam. The water was not as good, or not as cold, not as refreshing, and he wanted that water. Some say he asked, you know, he asked people to go get him some of that water. Some say that he didn't ask. He just kind of said out loud, you know, oh, I wish I would have that water. You know, like your wife might say, you know, oh, I wish I had a cold drink right now. Hint, hint, right? You know, so some say David was, you know, David was saying the same thing that, you know, I wish I had a cold drink right now. And his men got wind of it. And they said, okay, we'll take care of it for you.
No Pepsi machine?
No Pepsi machine. In Beit Lechem now there probably is, but not at that time. Okay. Test Zion. Vayivkeu shloshes ha-giborim b'machane plishtim. Now keep in mind, Beit Lechem was where the plishtim were camped. So David is, according to some of Farshim, asking his men to go get water from the plishtim, basically from the plishtim camp, right? Or something. He was just, you know, talking about it and they overheard. But essentially, they're not going into the, it's like, you know, it's like sending Chayalei Tzahal into Jenin to get a cold Coke, right? It's not a safe place. You know, they're going into enemy territory to get a cold drink. But that's what they did. Vayivku, they went in, right? They like split the camp. You know, these three Givorim went in, B'machane Plishtim, right into the camp of the Plishtim. Vayishavu mayim mibor beis lechem, asher bashar, and they drew water for David from this, from this well at the gate, vayisu vayavo el David, and they brought the water and they came back to David, but then David v'lo aval ishtosa, but David didn't want to drink it. He didn't want to drink the water. Vayaseich osam laHashem, and he poured it out as an offering, like nisuch hamayim. He poured it out to Hashem. Why? Pasuk yedzayin vayomer, because David said, chalila li Hashem. He said, Hashem, how can I do this? What I did was terrible. David regretted, according to some of the Mefarshim, he regretted what he did. He says, I endangered their lives. What, just because I wanted a drink? You know, so he wanted a drink and he said something again, whether he asked out loud, you know, he asked explicitly or he hinted to them. But either way, he, you know, he had these guys go into enemy territory to get a drink. He said, I feel terrible. I feel terrible. They risked their lives for me to get a drink. He didn't want to do it, right? The Radak says he had charata, he had regret. He didn't want to drink the water because he felt like I'm drinking their blood. You know, these guys risked their lives for this water. I'm drinking this. I can't drink this water. I have to do something holier with the water. I have to do something better with the water. And therefore, he took the water and he did a nisuch hamayim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now it's interesting. Nisuch hamayim we generally don't do, right? We generally do nisuch hayayim. Now we pour wine on the mizbeach. So some say that this was sukkah's time. Some say this was sukkah's time, and he did. I mean, sukkah's we know is chag ha'asif, right? It is the time of the harvest, end of the summer kind of, Sukkot time. So some said this was Sukkot time, and that's when there was a Nisuch HaMayim. There was no Beis HaMikdash yet, and it was maybe it was allowed to make a Bama. Whole discussion that it could be that this was the time when you were allowed to build a Bama, which is a private Nisayach, and he did the Nisuch HaMayim. With this water, he did the Nisuch HaMayim on Sukkot. That's what some say. Okay, now, yeah.
There must have been a purpose to ask for the water, what, to drink it. If it drained, you said now.
So I again,
my men for the territories and
I original. So the Radak says that originally he did want to drink it, right? And that's why he asked. But then he regretted it. He felt badly because he said, I asked for a drink. It's one thing to ask your men to go get a drink from the soda machine. It's another for them to send them into enemy territory to get a drink. What I did wasn't right. I risked their lives, and Baruch Hashem they survived. But I can't now go and drink this water. This is like holy water. They risked their lives for this water. I have to do something better with it. I have to do it. Bring it as a Nisuch HaMayim. Now this is all the push of shot, but the Radak here and some of the other Mefarshim, Rashi also mentions in one of the Psukim, says that that Chazal Darshan here. That he was really asking a shayla. He was asking a shayla. Who is he asking a shayla of? The Sanhedrin. And when it says that, when it says vayisav David, that David desired, right? In pasuk tesvav, it means he wanted to know the answer to a question, and that's why he said miashkeni mayim. We know that Torah is compared to mayim, right? Torah is compared to water. Hoikol tami lechula mayim. Whoever's thirsty should go and drink water, referring to someone who wants to learn Torah. And he says, who's going to bring me the Torah from the well of Beis Lechem that's at the gate? The gate we know always refers to the gates of Torah study. And this was referring to the Sanhedrin who was sitting at the gates of Beis Lechem. That's where they were sitting, I guess, close to the Plishti camp. And he wanted an answer from the Sanhedrin. Now, what was his Shaila? What was the Shaila? So you remember we talked about the field before. And we talked about the barley in the field or the lentils in the field. So the Radak explains this Medrash that the Plishtim were hiding in the field. So these were Jewish fields. The Plishtim were hiding in the fields. So what did he want to do? Very simple. If you have the enemy hiding in the field, what do? You set the whole thing ablaze, right? Burn the field down. You'll kill all the enemies. You'll kill all the Plishtim. You burn the field down. Problem was, these were privately owned fields. So David had a shaila, am I allowed to burn down these fields to kill the Plishtim, but I'm going to be making these people lose their parnasa, right? Am I allowed to do that? And that was the shaila that he wanted to get an answer to. He sent to the Sanhedrin. Now, what did the Sanhedrin respond? They said, technically speaking, you're not allowed to do that. Why? Because technically speaking, you cannot save yourself by being masked at someone else, right? Someone's running after me. I can't take, my friend's bag or computer and smash it in front of the guy who's chasing me to slow him down. I can't do that. I can't break someone else's thing to help, to help me. Obviously, it's koach nefesh. It's a different story. But here, the answer was kill them a different way. Don't burn down someone's field in order to kill them. That was the answer. However, they said, even though it's technically the case, since you're the melech, so the rule is, the halacha is that a king is allowed to seize property, right? If he deems it necessary, he's allowed to seize private property, right? The United States government has the same rule, right? Eminent domain, right? If they deem something as necessary, they're allowed to seize that property and take control of it. So the answer that the Sanhedrin said is that even though technically you're not allowed to do this, but since you're the king, eminent domain, right? You can take the property. So technically, you can also do that. Barley or lentils? Yeah, barley or lentils. Different.
So these three warriors went in there into these fields and killed the Plishtim. Or did they go into...
No, so they went to the Sanhedrin to get the answer. According to this Medrash, again, there's two different pshatim, right? According to the Pashup Shat, they went to get David a drink.
Right.
And when they were getting him a drink, they went through the Plishti camp. So presumably there, maybe they had to fight in order to get to the well, right? According to the other pshat, the Medrash, this was nothing to do with a drink, nothing to do with warriors going to battle. This was all about halacha. It was all about Torah. The other version of the Shaila here is that he said, and this is also the barley and the lentils, he says that maybe the barley belonged to Bnei Yisrael and the lentils belonged to the Plishtim. So David said, I want to take the barley that belongs to the Jewish people and use the barley to feed my animals. Barley was animal food. David had animals. So I want to feed my animals with the barley of the Jewish people and I'll repay them. I'll take from the Plishtim. I'll take the lentils from the Plishtim and I'll repay the Jewish people. And again, the answer was the same. Technically, you can't do that. You're not allowed to steal from someone. Even if you're repaying, you're still a goddess, right? You can't say, okay, I'm going to steal and I'm going to pay back. Can't do that. But again, since you're the king, you're technically allowed to seize the property. So technically, you'd be allowed to do that. Okay. Yeah. Well, right. So this is the Medrash. This is the Medrash. We'll do just two more psukim. And then we'll stop for the night. You know what? Let's stop here. It's already 9:46. We'll stop here. And next week we'll pick up. The end of the parak will go quickly. Probably next week we'll do this and then we'll start the next parak because the end of the parak is basically almost just like a list of the different warriors that are left. So we'll talk about it then.
How about you?
From the pshat. Good question. You know, it is based on hints from the psukim. Although the Radak actually, I didn't say this. The Radak is not very happy with this Medrash. He says, I don't like this Medrash. He says, I think the Medrash is very, very difficult, very loosely related to the Pshat, maybe too loosely. So he says, you should go with the Pshat here. Thank you,
Rabbi.
Yeah, Aaron, how are you?
Oh, thank God, Rabbi. Do we know what we're doing next yet?
We got to take a poll.
Okay, let's do it soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Time.
I'll send that a survey.